It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. Microsoft can top that M1 Apple. They've got Pluton. We'll talk about what's next for Microsoft Search. Mary Jo's actually really, really excited. And was it the biggest Xbox launch ever? Paul Thurrott has the details. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from our LastPass studios. Securing every access point in your company does not have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 699, recorded Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. Strictly Plutonic. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by LastPass. Give your IT and security leaders control of password security with the award-winning LastPass. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. And by ESET. ESET protects businesses worldwide with internet security products and services backed by world-class research and tech support. Get an interactive demo right now at try.eset.com/twit and start your free trial today. And by ExpressVPN. Stop letting people keep logs of what you do online. Protect your online privacy with one click. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft.
Are you sprinkling people with stuff? What are you doing?
I'm just excited. You know what the problem is? I've been playing too much Animal Crossing. And when the animals get excited, little things shoot out of their heads. And I think that...
cartoon alarm thing.
Yeah.
Like,
whap. And I think that's maybe going into my brain. This is bad. That's Paul Thurrott, who's got Call of Duty on the brain on his new Xbox Series X. He's at Thurrott.com and, of course, leanpub.com for his books. Mary Jo Foley is all about Microsoft.com, the ZDNet Windows coverage par excellence. And together, they are the dynamic duo of Microsoft coverage. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Happy Wednesday.
Thanks.
Yeah. So I just got to warn everybody, there's big processor news this week. People are talking. People are excited. You're going to hear more about it this week. It's been on all of our shows. Pluton is here.
An alternate reality where Microsoft still matters.
It does sound like an alternate reality. Pluton.
Sure.
So Pluton is a joint venture of Intel, AMD, Qualcomm, and Microsoft, right? All of them.
Which, by the way, is the most impressive thing about this, I think.
I know.
But we'll get to that. Yeah. We'll get to that.
It's a security architecture. Is it a whole new kind of chip, or is it just an architecture in existing chips? What is Pluton?
I know. So you see some people calling it a brand new chip, but actually I think it's an addition to the CPU. It's not just a chip.
It was likened,
it's like the whole architecture.
It was likened to Apple's T2 chip, which is ARM.
It shouldn't be either.
That's something else.
No, it's better. Okay. It's better than that. So the T2 is like what TPM was.
Right.
Back in the early 2000s.
A dedicated processor for a secure enclave and generation of security keys, things like that, storage and generation.
Yeah, so what Microsoft has discovered is that because that chipset is so secure, hackers are trying to work around it by finding vulnerabilities elsewhere. And one of the places they found those vulnerabilities is on the bus between the CPU and the TPM.
Wow. Oh, wow.
So what this does is it moves the security chipset, which is, I would call it, I mean, I don't actually know. I would assume it's an evolved version of TPM / whatever the Xbox security chip was. They moved it onto the chip, the actual CPU chipset. So it's inside the CPU.
So you don't have to worry about it going across the bus unencrypted. It never gets on the bus.
But that's why it's impressive, because Microsoft doesn't make any CPUs. So they've actually convinced Intel, AMD, and Qualcomm, the three companies that do make CPUs on which Microsoft's platforms run, or desktop platforms anyways, and they've all agreed to do it.
So is this would you categorize this as a system on a chip? Apple.
It's a system in a chip.
In a chip. Yeah. It's a SIC, not a SOC.
Yeah. Like system on a chip design is what people are calling it, right? System on a chip.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in mobile, that's what it always is a system on a chip. Mm-hmm. You're putting more and more functionality into the chip.
Right. That's right.
Because you don't have that any space. So it makes sense. You don't have room for a big logic board. But there hasn't been that pressure on desktop computing. But
not for space reasons, but for security reasons.
For security reasons, it makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. Yep. Actually, that's a first step toward what Apple's doing with memory, because memory is also on chip.
That's right.
Unified memory architecture, which is something Xbox does and has done since the beginning. But I wonder if that's...
It's going to be more efficient. You know, obviously, if the RAM's on board, it's faster.
I wonder if that's the step in that direction. So it'll be for Intel chips and Qualcomm chips.
And AMD.
Mm-hmm. And AMD chips.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Should you...
When I first heard about it, I was thinking, I've heard this code name or name before. And I had, because Microsoft used Pluton when they were talking to us about Azure Sphere, which was their Linux microcontroller and security system for IoT. And I went back and looked at the coverage, and we called Pluton then an onboard security subsystem. And that was on the MediaTek MT3620 chip, right? Which is the microcontroller they're using inside of Azure Sphere.
So actually, that sounds like the same kind of
concept, right?
Not really an architecture, but a design or whatever.
Yeah.
It's interesting because The Verge said it's Xbox-like security for Windows PCs.
Well, because they did something like this on Xbox.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they also do it on most smartphones. Samsung does it.
Well, Microsoft doesn't really have that capability, right? So they don't have a smartphone. So this is for Microsoft. The predecessor on the PC is TPM, but the predecessor from a sort of design standpoint, where it's actually on chip with the CPU,
right,
is Xbox and the Azure Sphere that Mary Jo mentioned.
And the reason it sounds familiar to you, of course, is because, as you know, it's an igneous intrusion, or an intrusive igneous rock that forms by crystallization from the magma slowly cooling beneath the surface.
See, I was going to say, it's another thing that's not a planet.
Pluton is actually a squirt of igneous rock. Okay. But...
And there's we also should say, this is not just about PCs and IoT devices, but also servers too, because it complements the work Microsoft's been doing with the Open Compute Project around Project Cerberus. Is that how you say that? Cerberus.
Kerberos.
Kerberos.
Oh, Kerberos. I think I said this wrong the last time.
Yeah. Too. Okay.
Yeah.
Kerberos. It's the dog that guards the door of Hades.
That's right.
Like multi-headed dark,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So there's also a server angle to this.
Cerberus, depending on your Latin.
Yeah.
It's actually Greek. Yeah. The multi-headed hound of Hades. Thank you very much.
Well,
it's such a good code name, right?
Cerberus is such a good
code name. Who doesn't want to be the dog in front of
Hades? Not like a heavy metal band name?
But Cerberus is also a security protocol, I guess. And so it's a good... That's for people who are into security, that says, oh, good, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kerberos.
Kerberos. Okay. Yeah. They made references to this new processor architecture also affecting how they patch things, right? They talked about it helping to make patches more like they currently are on Windows, but more regular and more regulated by Microsoft. So that's going to be interesting how that plays
out.
Right?
Yeah.
I know.
So some modern PCs, you can actually get a BIOS update through Windows Update. And I assume that it's that sort of a thing, like a firmware type update.
It is. Yeah. Firmware patching from many sources brought together so that it's authored, maintained, and updated by Microsoft is what they said. So Yeah. Right. Hopefully it goes better than Patch Tuesdays have gone.
Left field question, probably unknown.
Mm-hmm.
You can install Linux on a PC because you can turn off secure boot.
Yeah, this is the
yeah. Here we go. I know. Oh.
So did they address that?
The thing. They haven't said that.
Yeah.
But given history and given the fact that Microsoft isn't the only customer for, like, these are going to be in mainstream chips, right? I don't think what we're going to see is a special variant of a Core i5 or whatever that only ships in Windows-based PCs, right?
You can get non-TPM PCs, though, so.
That's okay. Okay. I mean, it's just from Intel's perspective, it seems like what they would do is let you in the firmware turn it off.
Yeah.
But no, Microsoft has not addressed that.
I mean, that's one of the things people are going with the new Apple chip. They're going, oh, crap.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Apple's really kind of locked it down. You have to have a signed read-only system partition, and presumably that's going to be protected by the system on a chip, and you probably can't put Linux on an Apple anymore. It'd be a shame if you could put it on a PC, but there'll still be people making. I mean, I have a PC core that's designed for Linux's core boot. It doesn't have TPM, doesn't have any Windows, doesn't have the Intel management stuff at all.
Yeah,
it's turned off, the Intel management engine. Yeah. So presumably you'd still be able to get something like that. But
I can't imagine, given the uproar over TPM and history, I just can't imagine they're not going to let you, them being Intel or AMD or whatever, turn it off.
No. I can see Microsoft saying, well, look, we give you Linux and WSL, so you don't yes. need that.
Yeah, that's the solution.
That's fine.
It's kind of, that was Apple's solution. Well, you just run it in Parallels, no problem.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
Fusion, sure. VMware Fusion. You just emulation, that's all. Okay. This, I think, I'm all for improving security, and hardware-based security is great. I thought TPM was great.
Yeah.
There was, as you probably remember when TPM came out, a lot of talk about, this is bad. Yeah. You know, this
Big Brother.
Big Brother. Big Brother, yeah.
Linux is a cancer.
Yeah.
Not TPM as catchy as TPM.
Cure.
Yeah, TPM was the cure.
Yeah. So.
Yes. So.
Well, the specifics around this are a little vague. Like when you look at the statements from the chip makers, they're all kind of like, yeah, we're all in favor of Microsoft doing this. This is going to be great. And then people say, well, how are you going to actually implement it? And when? And like, what are the particulars? Well, we're not ready to talk about that.
We'll get back to you. So there's no time frame. It's not like this is going to be the next PC you buy necessarily.
I thought next year.
Yeah, I thought it was next year. So
something with next year.
I would, given schedules. I mean, it's possible we might hear about some PCs at CES that ship with this, but it's more likely it's going to be more of a second half of next year. You know, IFA kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And then what has to change in Windows itself for this, right? And will that be part of 21H2, like, will that, because we keep saying that's going to be a big update. Will that also be affected by this?
You might see maybe Windows 10X only runs on this kind of hardware or something.
Oh,
you
know,
you could imagine.
You think?
I'm just throwing out as an idea. I mean, you can imagine, like, in other words, why would Microsoft have announced this now, given that it's not really ready and there's no industry event, Microsoft event that's happening right now? Like, what was the impetus for this announcement?
There might be in preparation. Show this week, right?
I
thought there was some hardware, like Intel hardware show this week, because it seemed like there were a lot of hardware announcements this week.
Okay.
Everything's virtual now, so it's hard to know when there's an event, right? It's like, is there an event this week? Yeah.
Okay.
But you know what? I hadn't thought of the 10X thing, and I'm like, oh, because one thing we do know about 10X is it's only going to work on new hardware. Like, it's not going to work on existing hardware. So this maybe could be part of that. That's not
It'd be far-fetched. One of the ways which they, Microsoft wants to be a little more like Apple, in the sense that they kind of soup to nuts the thing and don't want, they don't want to sell Windows 10X. Now people put it on normal PCs. They want you to buy a device. Yeah. You know, maybe this can be one of the restrictions where the system looks for this thing, and if it's not there, it doesn't even work. I just made this up. I'm
all for it. I think it's good. And you know what'll happen? It'll be a requirement in some enterprises.
Yeah.
You know,
Right. Just mm-hmm. like some people, our companies require vPro, whatever.
Yeah, it's like vPro. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it's kind of when you buy that, you know, Lenovo or Dell PC for work, you know, it says vPro plus Pluton.
Yeah, vPro, exactly. Some version of vPro. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the right way to do it. Okay.
Yep.
We've really, I think, exhausted this topic.
Well, we've certainly exhausted our understanding of it.
We have.
I'm sure there's more to it, but that's pretty much where we can land on it.
That's the story. That's the Pluton story. Not crazy about the name, gotta say.
Yeah.
I have a feeling.
It may
feeling,
just be a code name, right?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I think they're going to turn. I wouldn't be surprised if they called it integrated TPM or they came up with something.
Yeah. It'll be, It'll be, or something like vPro. Or maybe Intel will have a name for it. AMD will have a name for it.
Exactly.
And Qualcomm will have a name for it. In fact, that's almost certain, right?
Yeah. There'll be branding. And
Yeah. They don't, you're not going to have a sticker on your laptop that says Pluton inside.
Pluton.
God,
a picture of a ray gun.
Somebody in the chat room says, it's strictly plutonic.
Yes. Good. See?
Good. That's it. That's the name. Let's take a little break. More to come. Lots more to come, including Macs versus PCs, Windows 10, what's next for search. And a whole lot more. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. It's Windows Weekly time, the best time of the week. Our show today brought to you by LastPass. No, that's not your new jingle. Don't worry. LastPass. They brought you. We're in the LastPass studio. We've been LastPass and Twit have been like this, and Windows Weekly have been like this all year. Thank you, LastPass, for your great support of Windows Weekly. We really appreciate it. I hope you've been hearing the messages. In fact, now I'm wondering if you're not using LastPass, what's holding you back? You can't trust your most valuable data with just any company, and that's why we choose very, you know, kind of publicly and we shout it to the heavens. And I have been for 12 years. We choose LastPass for our identity and access management. I've been doing it for 12 years. Steve Gibson took a look at it. I can't believe it's been 10 years now. 10 years ago, he and the creator of LastPass, Joe Segris, compared notes. Joe showed him all the code, looked behind the curtain. Steve was very impressed. He's been using it ever since. We started using LastPass Enterprise about 6 years ago. And now with all our employees working from home, I am sure glad we're doing that. We're not the only ones that love LastPass, though. The G2 Fall Grid Reports, that's probably you know about it. It's a peer-to-peer review site that provides unbiased user reviews on leading software solutions. 746 customers have left user reviews. In a way, that's also a testament because people only leave reviews if they love something or they hate something. In this case, 93% of LastPass users on the G2 Fall Grid Reports rated them 4 or 5 stars. They love it. And they like it so much they wanted to go there and give it a review, which I think tells you something. LastPass is unique and vital for your business for a number of reasons. Your IT department, your security folks, can take back control of password security with LastPass. There's a central dashboard. You can review. You can see what's going on. You can. There's a very sophisticated structure of privileges. So you have a manager in a department. You can give them admin privileges, but just for that department's passwords or that folder. So they have appropriate level of access. You also can see how well your company is doing individually and as a whole in terms of their security practices. For every employee, you can view their password scores. You can see the shared accounts, monitor group memberships. You can see real-time readouts of your business password hygiene. You can see how it's improved over time. That's kind of important because nowadays we're really in kind of an ongoing training process with employees constantly, you know, refreshing them and reminding them of good security practices. You get audit reports that you can review, which help you build compliance and maintain accountability, detailed reporting logs that tie actions to individuals. It really is the way to keep track of what's going on in your business. It's a really important part of your overall security strategy. And LastPass will integrate with whatever you're using to onboard users, to sync groups, to revoke access. Your company can enable, we do, two-factor authentication. That's one of the more than 100 administrative policies you can invoke. Actually, we use MFA, which is really cool, multi-factor. So it uses the fingerprint or the face recognition or the iris or whatever biometrics. But in addition to that, contextual factors like geolocation and IP address, so that you're really sure that whoever is using your bank account, your databases, your websites, your all your stuff, all the keys to the kingdom, those are the people really who should be using them. It's entrusted to only those who should be accessing them. I love LastPass so much. I know our employees do. We actually give them as a benefit of employee, we give them a LastPass account for their personal use as well. I use it as my trusted store for my TPM for all the secure enclave for all the stuff that I want to keep track of. Not just passwords, but passports and driver's licenses and my family social security numbers and health accounts, things like that. LastPass is award-winning. 8 awards so far this year. PC Magazine's Editor's Choice, Fortress Cybersecurity Award, Business Insider's Best Overall Password Manager. That's just the beginning. I hope I've convinced you. You need to look at LastPass for home, for office. LastPass is the right choice. LastPass Enterprise for your business. Go to LastPass.com/twit to learn more. LastPass.com/twit. We know our employees are safe at home, but so are our resources. Thanks to LastPass. Back to the show we go, and I hate to do it.
Okay.
But we got to. Right.
We can handle it.
I honestly think, and I've said this numerous times now, I know regular listeners are sick of me saying it, but we are kind of at an inflection point in desktop computing, that Apple did something with these M1 chips. Now that we're seeing the reviews, it's kind of confirming what we were thinking, that is really transformational in terms of what desktop computing is and can do. Do you agree?
Yeah. But I think the problem is that the market is so much smaller than the potential market for truly mobile devices that it's kind of unclear what happens from here. Because, you know, on the Windows side of the fence, we're not making this transition, right? So the majority of the desktop computer market, which, you know, includes laptops, obviously, are still these kind of traditional PCs, you know, and will be for the foreseeable future. It is... You know, there are pros and cons to Apple's approach, but one of the big pros
is it your feeling that this is a benefit only for Apple users, and it doesn't really affect the other 94% of desktop users?
Well, I mean, look, there's no doubt that one thing Apple's always been very good at is influencing the rest of the industry, right? And so they have an outsized influence based on how many people use their products. I mean, today actually billions of people use their products, but
they've actually, since they went to Intel, they've grown market share from like 3% to 6%. I mean, still, it's a fraction of Windows.
Yeah.
But don't you think Windows users, don't you think people like Mary Jo are going to look over and say, how many hours about you get all, what, 20 hours of battery life?
I know.
Well,
you know?
I this is going to sound facetious, but the problem, but I mean it, you know, because I use a Mac occasionally. I always have a Mac. And I have to say, I don't find it particularly compelling. So,
the OS,
as exciting
Mac
as
OS.
This is,
you don't want to use Mac OS.
From a technical perspective, what they've done is amazing. But at the end of the day, I could spend $1,000 on one of these new Macs, boot the thing up, and it's like it's a Mac.
It's still a Mac.
So it's like
yeah.
Still, and it's like
people hate Macs. People, there is a significant Apple has not. Made
I don't
a lot of friends.
I don't come from this. It's not. I don't mean that from like a anti Apple perspective. I literally use Macs all the time, and I prefer Windows. So
it's
sorry.
Not for it's you. Just, yeah. But if it were a lot faster and battery life were a lot better and, you know, I mean,
I know the battery life is tempting. I cannot stand Apple, as everyone who listens to the show knows, but man, the battery life is so compelling and Windows battery life is so terrible.
And our performance is so terrible on Windows. I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon.
The reason this is successful is because everything works, right? And I know that sounds like the most simplistic statement of all time. But 2 or 3 years ago, whenever it was, the first Windows 10 on ARM-based PCs came out. And they did offer over 20 hours of battery life. You could get 20 hours of battery life.
But
you had to use this little piece of crap.
You wouldn't want it.
Yeah. And then, you know, there were major compatibility issues that persist to this day. The performance of those systems to this day, the new ones, are not as good as Intel-based PCs. They're just not. And so on the Windows side, there's this major compromise you have to make to get that battery life. And it's just not worth it because these things don't exist in isolation. You want all of these things, you know? And so we make compromises based on whatever, cost and capability and uptime and whatever it is. So the Apple thing is particularly impressive because you turn it on and it comes on and it's a Mac and it works and your software works. And that's how something like that should work. That's how you can make that kind of a transition.
Yeah, well, that's the strength of it. It's fully integrated from top to bottom, software and hardware.
Yeah, and like I said, there are pros and cons.
Microsoft can't do that without cheesing off all of their OEMs. I mean, they could. You could say Microsoft, I mean, they have the wherewithal to do it.
Why would they do that? So what's the advantage? In other words, what on earth would compel Microsoft to do anything like this? They have, two major OEM partners for microprocessors and then several for PCs.
Right.
Those several all use Intel and or AMD. Right. All of them.
Right.
Right.
So we have this legacy of software that everyone relies on. It's all Win32, x86 architecture stuff. Having to emulate that software to get some perceived benefit from connectivity and battery life on Windows 10 and ARM is not, well, it hasn't worked. I don't have to debate it. It's right. Failed. Yeah. So it's a hard thing to do. I mean, Apple, there's a lot of little things that go into Apple culture that contributed to making this work that just don't exist on the Microsoft side. And it's not Apple good, Microsoft bad. Microsoft's approach with partners has its own strengths as well.
Oh, yeah. For instance, NVIDIA GPUs. A couple of things.
Yeah.
Certainly Microsoft was impacted by the iPad. Probably shouldn't have been. But that drove Microsoft to a touch-first world. Mm-hmm. Maybe overestimating the strength of the iPad in hindsight. But they were, is it a different Microsoft that's not going to be looking over their shoulders and saying, oh, battery life, oh, performance, we got to keep up? And I think the one argument that it is a different Microsoft is, and maybe Microsoft doesn't even care because as they move to Windows in the cloud.
Yes, thank you. So
Azure,
I wanted to head in that direction. So someone on Twitter today said, and it's weird how people feel so attached to things like that. They're scared that some future $400 iPad will just run everything, all these desktop apps natively, and the need for a Windows computer will go away. And he kind of, for some reason, he CC'd me and Panos Panay, like on Twitter, right? So it's like, okay, aside from the psychological issues you obviously have, I don't know why you would be scared of this, but I don't think from Microsoft's perspective, obviously, you want Windows to be as good as it can be, but we've talked about this a lot. It's really about Microsoft 365 and the Office apps and everything. And so the client computing platform in some ways matters a lot less. When you can beam Windows down to any device using the cloud PC or whatever, the need for a literal Windows PC to be as efficient as some other kind of device becomes a lot less because now people can use whatever device they want. So look, the world's changing. There's no doubt about it. But we're still in a world where you're going to be able to run Windows and Windows apps or Microsoft apps on other platforms. And I think that's not a horrible outcome for Microsoft, or if you care about Microsoft, for you either, right? I mean, or for us as users of these apps. Like if I can access, I use I use Edge and Microsoft Word, and I use, you know, some photo editor or whatever. Does it actually matter what kind of hardware it's running on or, you know, whatever, as long as it works and, you know, there are no glitches? I mean, maybe not.
In which case, you're going to choose the one that has the longest battery life, the snappiest performance, the best screen.
You should always make the best decisions for yourself, right. You know, whatever they are. Like, whatever matters to you.
There's something that has not been much talked about on this. One of the things that Apple has done, this chip has 16 billion transistors. It's about 60% more than an Intel chip. The biggest. So they had a lot of extra space.
So much for risk.
Well, it's still risk, but they have a lot of space. That's, you know, to do other stuff. There's a significant amount of space devoted, I'd say about a sixth of the chip, to machine learning.
Yeah.
To AI. And I don't think people have talked about this a lot, but I noted that and I thought, why is Apple spending so much of their hardware budget on ML? What is that? Mm. And I think that that's, remember, these chips are designed 3 years ago.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But Apple, I think that's Apple saying, you know, going forward, you're going to see computers doing a lot more machine learning.
Like, yeah.
And ML stuff. And we need to build in dedicated hardware, just like they built in a dedicated image processor. Mm.
What that is? So Apple, it's funny, depending on who you talk to, Apple either does or does not have any particular prowess in artificial intelligence and machine learning. But one of the big contributions I think they've made to client computing in particular, but let's call it personal computing, because this is true of like HomePods and whatever other devices you might have around your house, is because of their, well, actually, I shouldn't say it that way. Apple will market this because of their protection of your privacy. The reality is Apple just to date, I mean, I know they're growing this stuff now, but they haven't had the kind of data center based AI capabilities that Google and Microsoft, Amazon have. So they do everything on device, but then there's a privacy story there too. And that kind of on device thing where AI and ML are happening right there in a secure enclave with no connectivity or bad connectivity has emerged as a key strength that everyone recognizes now. Microsoft creates devices like this. Google does the same thing. Amazon does. Like, this was something that kind of came out of an Apple liability, but they've turned it into a real strength. And then in doing that, it's become obvious that this kind of capability is actually very important. And I think what you're describing is the today's version of that evolution. You know, that it's more and more important to be able to do as much as possible right on that device.
I also heard from somebody after our show last week who said, I heard you guys talking about Apple and AI on the device. And I don't know if you guys know this, but a lot of data scientists use Macs. And I was like, exactly. Oh, I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
So that could be why too, right? Because Apple, I always think of Apple as going after the creative professionals, but if they are also broadening their audience or have this audience of data scientists, that could be another reason they're talking about AI processing on the device.
Chips that are in iPhones and iPads and smart speakers and, you know, whatever, you know, whatever.
I think that's exactly it. It's not necessarily Siri gets smarter. It's that applications can use AI.
Right.
And we'll have dedicated processors for ML.
Yeah.
So they can get smarter, they can get better, faster. I think that this app, rightly or wrongly, they may be completely wrong. Remember, again, you're playing a fight three years ahead of time.
Yeah.
But it tells me that in 2017, Apple said, you know, we think that applications are going to be smarter and are going to be have machine learning, and they're going to be, you know, and we want to build in hardware support for that. And I think that that's an interesting bet.
Have they done before this? I don't know enough about Apple's sort of secondary type chips, but they must have built chips in the past that were dedicated to this capability, right? Like they must have
dedicated ML chips. You mean?
Yeah, like in other words, Apple could go to Intel and say, hey, look, you supply our CPUs. We have this capability we know we're going to need. We need you to start building this stuff into your chips. And Intel would be like, and then Apple's response to that would be, well, we'll build our own chip then, you know.
That's exactly right. And that's what they did on mobile for a number of reasons. I mean, Intel also said, we don't have mobile. We don't have low power. We don't have anything you need. And Apple said, good, well, you know, we'll hold my beer. We'll just make the chips for the iPhone and the iPad ourselves. And both iPhone and iPad have those dedicated ML cores as well.
That's also been a big selling point for Qualcomm and other ARM vendors is the ability to do AI processing on the device.
Right.
That's been a big selling point for them.
And doesn't Microsoft have TPU-style machine learning chips in Azure? I believe they do. Cores.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. They have different what do they call them? VMs that are tailored to AI processing workloads in Azure.
Yeah. And typically when you were doing, you're doing, I'm a little out of my depth here, so correct me if I'm full of it. Yeah, but typically when you're doing training, you would do training on things like that, like the Azure with giant, because there's giant data sets. And what you're trying to create is a model that's small enough to then put on it a phone. And that's what Google spends a lot of time doing, and now on a desktop computer. So typically you wouldn't, I don't think you'd need those ML cores for a model that's been generated on these giant machines.
Well, but maybe, I mean, see, before Apple started doing this, I think the whole industry was moving in this very specific direction where edge devices were as dumb as possible because all this stuff was happening up in the cloud. And then at some point, the advantage of doing this on board the device became so obvious that it's happening everywhere on mobile, smart speakers, chipsets. You know, we see it in smartwatches, see it in smart speakers. You know, I think it's just, you know, Azure Sphere has some elements of this, I bet.
It's
you
cheap.
Need to have build something.
You've got a transistor budget, and it's not, it's a pretty big budget. So build it in. Just like you're building digital signal processing, even though laptops are not known for being camera devices.
Right. I mean, those things we've talked about on the show before, Azure Stack and a backpack, the whole idea is you have these devices and you want to do the AI processing right there. Yeah. Like you don't, later you're going to connect to the cloud and sync and all that, but like you can also do work right there on the device.
I think it's anticipating a generation of software that is self-modifying, that is self-improving, that gets better and better. That's something we don't have really yet.
Yeah.
But that's a really intriguing notion.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, self-driving cars right now don't get smarter about self-driving. You have to give them new models and teach them. But shouldn't they?
Oh, I think I learned driving to the gym how stupid drivers are. Yeah. I think a car should be able to
learn. You know, just say, well, I almost hit the guardrail there. Probably I should be a little more careful on that curve. Yeah. It should learn.
Right.
But now you have a chip with a budget for I'm going to guess those are pretty powerful machine learning cores there. I think it's really, I'm looking at the N1 not for what it's going to do today, and although I'm excited about that, but much more about what it means about computing going forward, and not just for Apple, but for everybody.
I think we talked about this last week. It was rather astonishing how many times they said ML in that presentation, given that to most Mac users, that doesn't mean anything, you know, that we're here to learn about this new Mac thing. And you keep talking about machine learning and have never once described why anyone would want this. That's interesting. I mean, you know, it may even play a role in the translation technology they use for all I know. I mean, who knows what the applications are for this thing, but it was notable. And they always do the die shot where it's like, here's all the stuff we have on the chip. And
a non-tech annotated it because they didn't really it's unusual to give away too much of that information, but a non-tech figured out how much of that is the ML cores, and it's a big chunk.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I just I feel like PC users are going to say, but I want that.
Well, PC enthusiasts are going to say that. PC users, this doesn't mean a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, other than, like, would we like more battery life? Yeah, duh. I mean, of course.
Well,
these days,
have
most people are working
remember
from home.
Onyx?
You know?
No. Remember this whole thing? There's this Onyx thing in Windows PCs. I'm looking for this right now.
Onyx?
So Microsoft has this, right? Microsoft has machine learning capabilities ready to be used on the PC if you want it. It's called Onyx, Open Neural Network Exchange. That's something Microsoft worked with on with Facebook. And they announced this in 2018 that Onyx and Windows machine learning was going to be possible on Windows PCs. So they've got it already, and it does appeal to a set of users who care about that, right?
Yeah,
they continue
again,
to enhance that.
The thing about Apple, though, is Apple has a way of energizing its various user bases in ways that Microsoft just doesn't do anymore. And that involves enthusiasts, obviously, and normal customers, but developers, too. You know, Microsoft hasn't gotten developers to follow it down a single path since the very early 2000s. I think we lost the entire world with Longhorn. Apple makes these changes and the world just turns with them, you know.
Yeah.
And so in many ways, Apple doing this stuff kind of formalizes it. And Microsoft had it first or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's possible we'll see stuff like this take on more prominence in the Windows side just because Apple did it, you know.
Mm. And again, Microsoft isn't unhappy if people use Macs because they're still going to make money off of
they
us.
They do. Right.
Yeah. What's the status of Office on the new Mac?
Oh, so how did they say this? So Office today will work. It runs through that Rosetta translation 2? Technology. Yep. Yep. So there's like a 20-second delay the first time you run the apps, but then they work normally. That's fine. 100% compatibility is great because Office has all these add-ins, and that's the type of thing that would normally fall apart through a technology transition. It's been a problem on Office as just on Windows from 32 to 64-bit. That's been a problem. Mm. Then they're working, of course, on a universal app version. So this will be the single app that works on both Intel and M1-based Macs, and I think that's available to people in whatever it's called now, the Office Insider Fast, whatever they called it now, beta, in an early form. So if you want to see what that's like today and you have a new Mac, you should be able to do that too.
So, that's good. So I can run it native. Apple calls these universal binaries. They run on both M1 and Intel. Mm-hmm. So there's a universal version of Office available now if you're an Insider. Oh, wow. That's cool.
That's my understanding. Yeah. I think that's what they said. Yeah.
Yeah. I was a little confused when the universal binary version would be available. So
The blog post, I don't think even mentioned it, but someone on Twitter from Microsoft said that it was available to beta, to the beta channel, I think is what it's called.
I feel like I saw that. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's good.
Here's the thing.
I'll give you reviews of all this stuff next week.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. I'm really curious.
That's good. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. They said they announced at WWDC in June this year that they've started moving Mac apps to the universal binaries. Like they said, they already told people they're doing this and it's underway. Right.
Yep. So
it was a very short post.
Yeah, I know, which is kind of, well, I think we mentioned this last week. It was a little weird that Microsoft wasn't part of that announcement.
Yeah.
For the new Macs.
In a way.
And I don't, to this minute, don't understand how that happened. I mean, Microsoft is, I think, one of the key third-party developers that should have been there, you know, should have been part of it. You know, whatever. But anyway, so in the wake of that, I think they were like, we should probably say something. So
say something.
They threw something together, pretty short.
Yep.
It's all good news. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. But, I think just to bring this back to the central point, the important point here for people who would listen to this show who are enthusiasts of technology is that what Apple did is amazing. It's amazing. And it is not what we have on the Windows side. That's a little hard. 3 years ago, I had written something about Windows 10 on ARM, and it must have been right before it came out with the first version. And my take on it was, if this thing is successful, it will be the most boring thing that Microsoft's ever done because you'll be able to just buy a computer and stuff will just work and you won't have to think about as a normal person what the architecture is. And, you know, it's the type of thing people shouldn't have to think about. But that, of course, is not what happened. And so for normal people, if you were to go to Apple.com today and I wanted a MacBook Air and I order one and you get it and it works and you don't even know that it's an M1. You know, who cares? I mean, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's a huge win, you know. Lack of drama and 100%. I don't know if it's 100%, but let's say very good compatibility, very good performance, you know, probably better wake and sleep times, probably better battery life, that kind of thing. That's the dream.
Yeah.
So, I mean, good for them. That's amazing.
Yep.
You know. it's amazing.
I thought it was interesting that Adobe is using the opportunity to say, "Yeah, we're making our products work on the M1," to say, and on Qualcomm.
Yeah, I know. We've been waiting for that for 3 years, Leo.
And, I know.
By the way, on Qualcomm.
There's a great example of Apple does something, formalizes it, and then it trickles down to Windows. So Obviously, Adobe's been working on Photoshop and whatever else for Windows 10 on ARM for years. We've seen no evidence of it, but every once in a while, someone will kind of mention it. And now that the Apple Silicon-based Macs are available, there is a beta version. I think it's just Photoshop right now, right? That's but eventually all of CC is coming to that platform, of course. And then, like you said, it's like, oh, we did one for Windows too. And it seems to have the same basic feature set on both sides. Like there's a bunch of missing features, basically the same features on both sides. A bunch of things that are kind of half implemented, and then whatever the feature set that works. They seem to be right on the same time frame or, you know, whatever schedule. I mean, they look like they're in the same place.
Haven't we seen demos of Photoshop like for Windows for years? I feel like we've seen it at multiple events, right?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. I have to say, running Photoshop in ARM on Windows does not sound like a pleasant prospect.
No, yeah. I would think cloud PC is how you would want to do that more than natively. Yeah. I don't know.
where do we stand with cloud PC? Is that imminent? I think
it's just going to solve our problems. Tell me this is going to solve our problem.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be spring 2021 if they stick to the schedule. Wow. So it's close. Yeah.
So good. So I can run Windows on my Mac after all.
Yeah. Well.
Will I need a client? Will it be HTML5?
It's like desktop as a service, right? So your apps will run virtually through Windows Virtual Desktop.
What's my client locally going to look like? Is it a browser?
Is it the web browser? Or it's probably a native client and
remote
or the
desktop,
web browser.
Right? It'll be like remote desktop works, kind of.
Okay. So there'll be some client that I'll run.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that will be made compatible with the M1. So,
of course. Yeah.
That can run. So we believe cloud PC will run on anything.
Anything.
Like any platform.
Android, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, it will.
Right.
Chrome OS, everything. Yeah. See, that's a smart move by Microsoft. That's the way to make Windows. I mean, Office. Office should run everywhere.
Yeah.
It should be
Office almost
the same.
Run everywhere.
It's the same Office everywhere.
Right. Yeah. Same Office everywhere. Yeah. And the same, ultimately, the same Windows everywhere.
Yeah.
Right.
I would be much more likely to use Windows in that case. The only people who won't is gamers. They're still going to want a bare metal experience.
Right. Right.
No, I think cloud PC, if it really works like Windows Virtual Desktop works, and it supposedly is based on Windows Virtual Desktop, that's the game changer right there, right? That's here you go. You pay X dollars a month, and you can run any app you want.
Pricing's the key. That's going to be the key.
Yeah, it's going to be a flat fee, supposedly, per month, per user. It's not going to be based on how many apps you stream or how much bandwidth. It's not going to be that. It's going to just be a flat subscription fee is what we keep hearing.
Yeah, I mean, this solves a lot of problems. And for businesses, especially where you might have some legacy apps that we're getting it to the point where obviously you're going to be running Windows 10 on the desktop. But your business may still have these legacy apps that require whatever it is, some older version of Windows, or whatever, or you just want to keep your data separate or whatever it is. I mean, it just solves problems. It's kind of nice, but it also has this potential to be this multi-device solution for individuals over time as well, where, you know, like you said, maybe I have this Android tablet or an iPad or whatever it is, but I really do need some specific Excel function that's only in the desktop version. And this is one way to get that down to those people. So,
and in theory, it could be as performant. I mean, that PC in the cloud could be a gaming PC.
Right.
Like it is with xCloud, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
What would hold that back? Your bandwidth,
latency. I mean, latency.
But WVD I don't use WVD, but everybody I know who has used it, like it gets very favorable performance reviews. Like people are like, yeah, it really delivers as promised.
They got to change that name. That acronym does not work.
Windows Virtual Desktop.
What do you got? I got WVD. What do you got? Oh,
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Is it contagious?
That is not, that must.
I have stage 4 WVD.
Guys, don't give them any ideas. Their branding this year has been so in flux and they've changed so many names. I think they just need to leave that as WVD.
It's Pluton in the sky. No, I really like WVD, and I would bet the stock market will really like it too because it's an annuity for every single user. It makes you universal.
Yep.
It's a much better, I don't know, I'm not an expert, but isn't this a better business model for Microsoft than off-the-shelf software? It's kind of what's happened with music and TV, too. You stream everything now.
It's
you
a subscription games. Service. That's
it's
what
all
they
streamed.
Want.
Everything is streamed.
Right. More
Would you
predictable
call it the Roku
revenue
desktop
stream?
Computing, please?
Well, ultimately, your client is a Roku. Just like your Roku right. holds no That's content, it's a gateway to your content. Your desktop will become a Roku, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
A gateway to your operating system.
Yep.
God, Sun was right again.
Damn it.
The network is the computer.
PC.
Yeah. Who knew?
Yeah. Really interesting to me.
I know.
We've been in the doldrums, let's face it, for about 10 years. Nothing's changed. It's just been like, you know, it's the same old, same old.
Well, you mean at the PC space?
In technology space.
I guess you're right. Mobile has raced ahead. Cloud computing has raced ahead. I think this is, I think we're just seeing a bunch of things coming together. Obviously, ML has been huge. But I think we're seeing a bunch of these things all kind of exploding into, you know, together into stuff that makes sense. So we'll see.
It's interesting times. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very interesting.
Thank God it's happening now, because otherwise this year would have been the worst.
Oh, I know.
So I have a question, just thinking aloud. Could this be the way Microsoft gets around its Windows on ARM problem? Like, what if they just say to people, you know what, just use Cloud PC.
They don't care.
Apps you know, we couldn't pull it off.
Well, so by the way, Windows 10 on ARM, if you think about it, the basics are all there. Right. You got the operating system and all those apps, web apps through Microsoft Edge or whatever web browser you choose. That stuff should all be fine for the most part. Right.
Yep.
So if you have some specific application compatibility issues with ARM, which, you know, you will. This would be a solution for that, too. Of course. Yep. Yeah, it solves the problem of Windows
10X.
Like, what if 10X can't figure out
Win32
compatibility? Well, what if they don't have to anymore? Yeah, maybe we just don't worry about that.
Yep.
That allows that system in particular. I think it's a little more interesting for 10X. In fact, I think I've said this before. It seems to me like 10X should be on ARM, you know, not on Intel.
Yeah.
Like
a lot of people think that.
Yeah, it just seems to make more sense, right? New system, new UI, lightweight. Let's get rid of this. Forget the Win32 thing.
I've had so many people say to me, are you sure 10X is going to debut on Intel and not ARM? And I said, yes, I am totally sure.
That's what Microsoft has said. I mean, that's not something we just made up. I mean, they've said this.
No.
In fact, they've said it's Intel only.
They have. But internally, they've got it running on ARM. They've got 10X running on ARM.
I mean, of course, that makes sense, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, at some point, if they just say, look, Cloud PC, whatever we're calling it, works so great. We don't need to. Why even do this work? Who cares?
Mm-hmm. I know. That's what I keep wondering. Like, if it actually does work as promised, do you even care if you have the emulation mode and all that stuff? Like, why don't you just say to people, if you need this to work, use
this
PC.
This ties back to the thing I said about the imaginary normal person buys a MacBook and they don't even know that it's a M1 based thing. If everything just works, nobody cares. Nobody needs to know. We don't need to know how an engine works to drive a car anymore. You know, computer devices should be like that, and they are. I mean, a lot of them, of course, are. But, that could solve a lot of problems.
Yep.
I think. But, I mean, we have to see it happen in real life, obviously. These are
That may even be a bigger change than the M1. In fact, I kind of had this thought a few months ago when Apple announced this change that that's nice. You're revolutionizing desktop computer right when it's going away anyway.
Yeah. well, there's a lot of, so it is kind of interesting that of Apple's platforms, the smallest one, right, has just been bumped up to be more modern and efficient and everything at a time when they're also promoting this thing called an iPad Pro that supports desktop class apps in some ways, right? Office and Adobe and all that. It has a keyboard and a trackpad now. In some ways, they're kind of all over the map. You know, when you think about it. But, you know, whatever. Yeah. Thank you.
Have you just received your bowling alley credentials? What is...
I have received a package.
A package. You've got
What's
mail.
In it?
Is it a new Surface device?
No. No, it's just a Pixel.
Just a Pixel. Boy, Google's feeling pretty lousy right about now.
they made the products they made.
It's
not my fault.
Yeah, they hate them too. Surface end of life, end of device support.
Right. So this was an interesting timing thing also. Friday afternoon last week, Microsoft published on docs.microsoft.com a whole bunch of new information about when you will no longer get driver and firmware updates for various Surface devices. So I was thinking this must just be an update to something, but no, this is like a whole bunch of new information that they hadn't published before.
Right. They've never published this, right?
No.
I thought this was very interesting.
Yeah. So people are mostly interested in things like Surface Laptop 3 and Pro 7, Pro X, right? And all of those things are going to be supported with firmware and drivers until 2023, various dates in 2023. The new Pro X SQ2 2024 and the Go 2 2024, Surface Laptop Go 2024. So I thought, okay, this to me seems reasonable, right? And these are just the dates for when you get updates for your drivers and firmware. So if you will still continue to be able to run these devices even after those dates, as long as your version of Windows 10 will still install, because
that's the they're going to continue stuff.
They're going to give you security updates for these devices beyond that.
That's the thing I was kind of scanning for. Did they ever mention Windows in here? And they don't exactly. They kind of link to another site that explains how versions of Windows are supported and all that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess what people I think what people are probably wondering is, I buy a Surface Pro 7 or whatever, and this thing is a circa 2019 product. It's going to be updated with, you said, firmware and whatever types of updates, firmware updates, we'll call them, through whatever date.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So that's great. How long is that thing going to be supported on Windows 10?
So it depends, right? How long you can continue to install a new version of Windows 10, because you have to stay within the supported time frame for Windows 10 to get this.
Where's that page? where's the page?
Well, that matches, you know, that
a particular Surface device to a particular.
And we don't know, right? Because I feel like those dates are so, like, those device support dates for the operating system. You just never know when your device isn't going to be supported anymore. Like, suddenly it's like, oh, yeah, you can't get the next update. Well, sorry.
I think it's literally because they can't say. And I don't mean that from a Surface perspective. I mean that just PCs in general, right?
Yeah.
So we've already seen some instances where all of a sudden, you know, there's a problem where a particular CPU that worked just fine in Windows 10 all the way through the current version, we're not supporting this now on the next one. And it kind of happens that suddenly. And people who own those PCs are like, what's going on? This thing works fine. Yeah. And I feel like that's how we're going to find out. It's going to be a little bit of a surprise, you know?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And then I had some people on Twitter introducing a scenario I hadn't thought about, which was, say you buy a Microsoft complete contract, right? Which guarantees you support for X number of years. What if your complete contract says you get support past these dates that they just threw out there? And I'm like, that's a good question. Yeah. I don't know. Oh, yeah, that's what I asked, and I haven't heard back.
What does support mean? See, this is there's so many nuances to this. What does that mean? Yeah. You're still supported with security updates. So, I mean, what is it you think? What is it you need to get? What are you looking
for? But, you know,
here?
So like we were talking about with the Pluton chip, a lot of the problems that happen to PCs happen at the firmware level. Like, there's a lot of security issues around that. So if you're not getting firmware and driver updates, are you really secure? Like, you're getting the operating system, right? But you're not getting the firmware. So that, like, puts you in this weird limbo state almost, right? And so I'm trying to get them to answer me about those special cases where, you know, especially for something like Surface Studio. Like, some people bought Surface Studio 2 years after it was announced. And so the support for that is going to end pretty soon because they haven't yet introduced Surface Studio 3. And people are saying, so wait, I bought this like in whatever, 2019, but the support's going to end very soon. So what happens to me? Like, I don't know.
You have a very large paperweight.
I know. So that's worrisome. And, you know, a lot of people have issues around Surface devices because you would think because Microsoft is the maker of those devices that everything will be better, right? You get your updates faster, things would just work, and you wouldn't have as many problems. But no, that's not how it works. That is not how it works.
You would only assume that if you didn't know anything about it, because the truth
I had to think twice when I bought the Surface Laptop 3 because I knew all the caveats about things that could happen, but I did it anyway because I really like the device, and luckily, knock on my wooden desk, nothing has happened to me so far, relatively speaking.
Do you have what would you say the average lifetime is for these things support-wise from a
I'd say now device? It's like 4 years from the date of introduction to how long they continue to push the drivers and firmware is about four years. Four years for most of the devices. Yeah.
So a little bit better than a Chromebook, not as good as a Mac.
Yeah.
That's Windows in a nutshell, isn't it? A little bit better than a Chromebook. not as good as a Mac.
Yeah. I don't know. It is frustrating when you have a PC that works. Like I had that Dell for almost 10 years, right?
It's so and hard, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the Dell, but I'm like, it works. It still works.
Honestly, that's why end of life for almost all PC hardware for me is putting Linux on it. And then it just continues to work.
Does it literally play like a little funeral dirge?
Your end of life. Bling. Welcome to the afterlife.
Right.
Yes.
But
it's better than you thought.
I don't know, but my sense is it's hard to put Linux on Surfaces.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. And don't buy a Surface if your goal is to run Linux. Yeah. That would be a mistake.
Dell's great. Yeah. Lenovo's great.
And both of those companies offer direct.
Linux. You get Red Hat on a Lenovo. You can get Ubuntu on a Dell. So, yeah. That's probably another good reason why I didn't buy a Surface laptop. Because,
device.
And the life. I got to put Linux on it or it's curtains. No afterlife for you.
I feel like the effective lifetime of a PC is much more than 4 years.
It ought to be.
I do, too.
It really ought to be. And we don't have to put these things in the landfill.
No, I feel like phones, that's fair. I feel like phones, that's more fair.
3 years, 4 years is a little aggressive, honestly. But, I mean, PC should last 5 to 8 years.
I think 5 years. I do. I think five minimum.
At least.
Yeah, I do.
At least.
Unless you have a very special, gamer, engineer, programmer, whatever. But, I mean, normal people, it should be fine.
So when the device support date ends, it doesn't mean you can't use your Surface anymore.
No, it doesn't mean that.
It just turns off. Sorry, guys.
It's over.
No, because you're going to be able to continue to run Windows 10 and get, your feature updates and your security updates for Windows 10. Past those dates, you are.
That's the unknown is for how long.
Right, we don't know how long. After those dates.
And it doesn't, I guess it doesn't preclude if something important happens, like you said, like a security firmware thing.
Right.
Microsoft would release that in the future, of course. I mean,
they would.
They do that.
No, they just recently introduced an Office 2010 security update, even though it's no longer supported, because there's certain things they decide, like, it's dire and we know people are running it. We have to.
It's getting clippy. And we decided that we needed to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
I think we could do a little Windows 10 before we take a break.
Yeah, this is all pretty
quick stuff, right? Dev channel build is out. New one.
Yep. Nothing new. Just fixes and known issues. No new features.
Okay.
As of today.
And this is 20H3 we're talking about?
What the heck this
is? This is the thing called the iron build, but Microsoft has not said this is 21H1. They have not said that.
Right. It's Fe. So
it's something. We think it is.
Fe.
Fe.
Fe. Yep. They're being Fe about it.
They are being very Fe, and they haven't said if there will be a 21H1 update. They haven't said any of that. So I think we're going to have to wait until probably the beginning of next year for them to say something about this.
Yeah. Something.
Something. Something.
Something.
Yeah.
Microsoft has a holiday gift for us all.
They do.
It's like Christmas in December.
Yeah. Optional non-security updates, preview updates that come out in the C and the D weeks, as if you know that nomenclature. They are going to be paused for December.
It's really a gift. It's a gift for their employees.
It is. Exactly. A lot of people at Microsoft take a lot of December off for their vacation traditionally. Yeah. So, yeah, there's no optional updates happening in December. You will still get your Patch Tuesday in December, but yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
This doesn't affect anybody really, though, right? It's not.
Well, it affects IT pros who have people who look at these preview updates just to see what's coming down the pike and make sure everything's okay, but you're not going to be able to do that in December.
You get December off too.
You do.
Congratulations.
That'd be nice. Okay, yeah. Well, I wonder where I'll go.
I know. Where's everybody going to go? They're just going to be home.
I'm doing the 2020 Advent of Code. I like doing this every year. It's fun.
You're opening a calendar item every day.
Yeah, but the calendar item is a very difficult programming challenge. Part one, part two.
I like this. That's a good idea.
AOC is fun. If you're going to be home anyway. I only got through the first five problems, which is actually 10 because there's two parts, but I only got through the first five to December 5th last year before I completely melted into a puddle.
Gave up.
Well, it's like it got, you know, the first one you can do pretty quick. Then it's, you know, each one gets a little harder. By day five, it was taking me weeks to do one.
Which of the following is an integer?
No, it's much more complicated than that. It's actually really fun, Paul, if you ever want to do it. Adventofcode.com.
I'll look at that. No, I'm not sure I've even heard of it.
I've done it a few years in a row. I'm not very good. You know, if you're a pro programmer, there are people who complete these in minutes. If you're a pro, you know, you can really show off your chops. Mm-hmm. But for somebody like me, it's really just a chance to kind of, you know, get better at coding until
they have a text mode website, which I'm sure.
Oh, it's a beautiful website. I love the website.
That's good.
If you want to get an idea, you can look at previous years.
That's really funny.
And see, like, go look at the 2019. It's all done in kind of Christmassy style. You know, here the first one is Santa's become stranded at the edge of the solar system while delivering presents to the other planets. And then it gets complicated. To accurately calculate his position in space, safely align his warp drive, and return to Earth in time to save Christmas, he needs you to bring him measurements from 50 stars. Collect stars by solving puzzles. Two puzzles will be made available each day in the Advent calendar. The second puzzle is unlocked when you complete the first. Each puzzle grants one star. You can write in any language you want. All they ask for is the answer. They don't look at your code. They just say, okay, here's the problem. What's the answer? And if you provide the correct answer, you get a star. It's really, really fun.
Nice.
I enjoy it. You'll enjoy it, Paul. It's a good thing to do while you're waiting for 20H3.
I'll do it in GW Basic.
You know, you could. Any Turing complete language you could do it in. I usually do it in Racket.
But, Delphi?
Delphi you could do it in, sure. What are you most proficient in, Paul? Python?
No. I would probably do C#.
Yeah, that would be a nice, powerful tool to do it.
Yeah, probably C#.
Yeah.
What about the Power Platform? Could you do it?
No code.
No code. No code version. I think there are no code solutions for these. No.
Right.
They're pretty tough. There are people who do it in Unity because then you get these beautiful graphical displays of your answers and stuff. I mean, it's... there are a couple people did last year, different language every day, 30 different languages.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's.
Yeah.
It's finger exercises for the programmer.
Cool. It's nice. I like it.
Quick check in on issues affecting the current version of Windows 10 20H2. I'm using it without issue, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
If you look now at the release information page, though, there's a few things on there that weren't there before. They had a Kerberos authentication problem. That didn't just affect 20H2. That affected a few other versions of Windows 10. And it says investigating. But I believe as of today, they may have started patching that. Also, the certificates may not be present after updating to the new version. They have fixed that. That was another one of those issues that blipped up this week, and now it's fixed. So most everything on here that's on the list is mitigated now. The Thunderbolt SSD issue with the stopper, it's still listed as investigating. And those pesky Conexant audio drivers still on there as investigating. But I have to say, I haven't really heard from people by email or Twitter who are having problems with 20H2. I still have people who can't get 2004. I've keep hearing from them. They're like, why can't I get version 2004? I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. But yeah, it seems to be going well, I would say, with 20H2.
Certainly so nothing like the spring 2004.
Yeah, spring 2004. That was some slow going there.
Yeah. That was bad. Bad.
It was.
Well, that's good. I'm glad. That's what we'd expect with 20H2 because it was kind of the polish.
Yeah.
It's taking that that fine copper light that was 2004 and polishing it up to a shiny hue.
Yeah. We've expected this of many Windows 10 releases that haven't gotten it. So,
I know. I feel like we say this all the time. Like, seems like it shouldn't be a problem. And then next week it's like, it's a huge problem.
I think I've been bitten enough. I'm not going to predict anymore that this should go fine. But it feels like it should.
It does.
It feels like it. Yeah. Edge news? Anything on the Edge?
Yeah, so this is going to confuse people because if you thought like I did that this stuff was just already there, but if you think about Microsoft Edge and how, of course, it supports web app notifications, you probably know that those notifications can appear as native OS slices, I guess, notification panes or whatever. But also you can pin apps to your taskbar and you can have notification icons and, notification overlays, I guess, on top of the icon for the site, right? So if you have an email application is the obvious example. You have three unread emails. You see like the number three in a circle on top of that icon. Well, it turns out that in the latest versions of Edge, it kind of varies depending on which feature we're talking about. They've actually improved this stuff. So background notifications suddenly just work now in Edge, I guess 85 or newer. 85 might actually be the newest version. And it requires actually 20H1 or newer. 20H1, that doesn't seem right. There's no such thing as 20H1.
Some people call 2004 20H1, right?
Well, it might mean 20H2. I might have just mistyped it. Anyway, and then the app icon badge thing now is supported for progressive web apps, but also for pinned sites. So anything you pin there, if they have a notification system of any kind built into the site, it will actually transfer through to the icon on the taskbar. And that's all great. But like I said, this all worked in the old version of Edge. Like I'm a little confused, but I guess no one has to do anything to enable this. So if you're a web developer, there's no special stuff. It just works with what you're using already. It's just fun. So.
Yeah.
If you're
confused, there were a lot of things in the old Edge that got deprecated when they went to the new Edge that they're adding back, right? I mean, it feels kind of like that happened.
I like Edge. I just want to say I like Edge.
Credge. You like the Credge.
I don't use it anywhere but Windows, but on Windows it's good. It's nice.
Joe's hellbent on pushing this name through.
Credge.
Credge. It's the perfect name. Credge. They should have bought it off me when they had the opportunity.
Now the price is going up.
It's going up.
Yes, it is. The price has gone way up on this thing.
I hope you trademarked it.
I should have.
Credge is a service mark of Mary Jo Foley Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Exactly. Every time you say it, a little cha-ching sound happens and a dollar goes into her account.
Exactly.
All right, little break here. Then we still have some search news. Update on Project Reunion, which to me is one of the more interesting things going on in the Microsoft world. Yep. I want to hear the latest there. And I think Paul has made some more Xbox stuff to talk about.
A little bit.
I'm a little bummed. They now say they're probably not going to have more Xboxes till next year. Series X.
Now what they're trying to do is reset your expectations so they can blow them away.
Blow them away. I got a little something special for you coming down the chimney.
Or something.
It's a chimney coming down your chimney. It's kind of cool. Right. Our show today brought to you by ESET. I like ESET. I've been talking about ESET for years. What I didn't know is that completely unknown to me and without any coordination on our part, our IT guy, Russell, has been putting ESET on our machines for years, too. We use ESET in the enterprise because we have a lot of users working from home. ESET actually has a great work from home package. I'll tell you about that in a second. There are two things I love about ESET. It's accuracy and it is a lightweight system. Multiple layers of protection that you just won't even know that it's there. It's available on-prem. It's available in the cloud. You can purchase it directly. You can do what we did, buy it through our MSP, Russell. Or they even have an ESET reseller program. So they don't mind whatever way you want to do it. That's fine with them. With ESET's security management center, Russell showed me this. This is the thing he likes. He gets a real-time overview of all of our endpoints, whether they're on or off-prem. There's full reporting, automated security management for every operating system, and you access it. He can access it wherever he can get online. So he's always moving around. He has some wineries, his customers too. He might be in Napa, but he can always check our dashboard to see how we're doing. And this is the thing I love. ESET's always, it's like I said, multiple layers of protection. They have something new called Dynamic Threat Defense, which is another great layer of security for ESET products like their endpoint and mail security product. What it does is they have a cloud-based sandbox. If you get an attachment, well, you don't get it yet. What happens is on its way to you, they stop it. They put it in the sandbox, execute it in the cloud in the sandbox, nowhere near your network or your devices, and analyze its behavior. If the behavior is suspicious, they stop it. If it's okay, they pass it along. This happens so quickly you won't even notice. But this is the best way to identify a zero day, a suspicious program nobody knows about that's never been seen before, all before it reaches your users or your network. Dynamic Threat Defense. It's a brilliant idea. And it'll give you a better experience than any other security program you're using. We've been using ESET for years. And if you are in a business that has compliance requirements, don't worry. ESET's absolutely there to meet compliance requirements, whether it's PCI or GLBA or HIPAA. Check with your ESET seller, reseller, or ESET itself if you want to find out. But that's a nice feeling too. If you have a remote workforce, as we do, check out ESET's remote workforce bundle. This gives you advanced ransomware and business data protection along with all the other bundles ESET offers. Protect your employees at home or at work. ESET, totally awesome. Top reviews from independent testing labs, not just for extremely accurate detection, but also for minimal system impact. They're a great fit for small to medium businesses like ours. I hope you'll check them out. ESET understands the security needs and concerns of SMBs. You can trust them to future-proof your business. Whether you're working at home or you're back in the office, get an interactive demo right now at try.eset.com/twit. You can also start a free trial there if you want to try it out. try.eset.com/twit to get your free trial of ESET's award-winning endpoint protection. ESET. try.eset.com/twit for your trial. Use that, by the way, to let them know you saw it here too. It helps Paul and Mary Jo and all of us. Keep the lights on here. What is next for Microsoft Search?
So you know how I'm really excited about Cloud PC and I keep talking about it?
Yes.
I feel like Microsoft Search is one of these things that people don't quite get how big and important this is going to be going forward.
We just think Bing and then we laugh.
I know. Mm-hmm. And it's not. I know.
And we laugh.
So Microsoft has two kinds of search. Bing is the one everybody jokes about, you know, and talks about. Well, no one talks about it, but people joke about it. So Bing is Microsoft's web search. But then they have this other thing called Microsoft Search. And you may have started seeing this pop up in various Microsoft applications and services. It's this idea of one unified search across things like Office. So, you know, every app in Office has the same search box in the same place. And then when you use that search box, you get not only, you know, what you expect as web search results, but you also can get search results that are customized to you and your organization. So if you use Microsoft Search and you do a search, say, inside of Word, and you search for who knows about Apple M1, and you, things will pop up in your search results. It'll tell you who in your organization knows about this. And ultimately, it's going to tell you where in the organization they are, who they report to, where they sit physically when we go back to offices. It'll show you documents that you have the right to see within your organization that pertain to this topic. So this is going to be really powerful as it continues to roll out. And the reason I'm talking about it this week is I was looking at the Microsoft roadmap for Microsoft 365, and I just put in Microsoft Search, and there were like 50 results of things that are going to show up in December if they actually deliver on the roadmap. One of the things is they're going to integrate Microsoft Search into Windows Search in December. It's going to start rolling out. They've talked about this for a couple of years now. So when you type in the Windows search box, you know how now if you go to the Windows search box, you see like a list of things on the right that say your Bing results. So like weather and top news and history. And then on the right, you can see things that are more customized to you, like searches inside of your own apps and documents and things that are on your PC. Well, once they integrate Microsoft Search into this, you're going to start seeing things in your company and your organization that you're allowed to see when you do a search. So instead of just seeing when you type in like project reunion, right now I only see my own results and web results. But now once this is integrated in Microsoft Search, you're going to start seeing project reunion results from inside your org, like meetings that have happened in Teams that have to do with Project Reunion, people in your organization who know about Project Reunion. So this is going to make search a lot smarter and a lot more people-centric, again, if they pull off what they're trying to do. So on the December roadmap, I mentioned Windows integration. Teams is also going to get the unified search capability built in as of December, according to the roadmap. Again, I keep saying this as a caveat. That roadmap is mostly a marketing tool, but if they do deliver it starting next month, you'll be seeing the unified search box in Teams. You're going to get more semantic search capabilities, which means you're going to be able to start doing queries more in your own words, you know, like using natural language. So that's going to be more, make searches a little more easy to figure out. Because right now when you do searches, or at least when I do, I'm always trying to think of the right keywords or the right order to do a query. And when you have true semantic search, you can actually just use your own natural way, like tell me about Project Reunion and type those words into the search box and have results come out. So there is a ton of stuff, even Dynamics integration. You know me and Dynamics, I'm always very skeptical if they can pull things off. They promise, but that's listed on the roadmap too. Project Cortex, their knowledge management system, some of those capabilities that they've been talking about are going to be surfaced more through Microsoft Search. So yeah, this is a big deal. And I think a lot of people don't understand. There's Bing, and then there's a separate thing called Microsoft Search. And if I had to pick between the two, which is more useful, I think I'd go with Microsoft Search.
Wow.
So you can
Mary
try
jo
this
condemns
right.
Bing is what I just heard.
Well, headline. You know, I always tell people to Bing it, but
key Microsoft Observer ridicules Bing.
News at 11. Who hasn't? If you go to Bing right now and you're bing.com and you sign into your browser with your Microsoft account, I don't know if you've ever done this, but you actually get your search results in there now. So if you try this and you're signed in to your Microsoft 365 account and you go to bing.com, what comes up on your page is your own search results from your work account. So I can see like my work calendar. I can see recent files. All these things show up on the Bing.com page already. Have you ever done that?
You mean with a Azure Active Directory, like a commercial account?
Yeah, a commercial account.
Yeah.
No, not your personal account.
Have I ever done that? So that's already there.
Yeah, okay. It's there now. And that's one way, because the idea of Microsoft Search is instead of you having to go somewhere to find a result, they're just trying to make it so wherever you are, if you're in an app, if you're in a service, if you're on, if you're are used to going to the Windows search box, or if you're used to going to a URL like Bing.com, you're going to be able to get your search results. I don't want to use these words because I have ridiculed Thanos for saying them, but you get to stay in your flow.
Yikes.
If you use Microsoft Search.
Would you say you're super pumped to use Microsoft Search?
I might say that. I might say I'm pumped about Microsoft Search. Yeah. I'm very intrigued. And I think this is one of those kind of hidden, when we have Chris Kapp on later this year, I think this might be one of his hidden gems. You know, he always says, these are the things you guys don't really talk about much, but are big. I would put Microsoft Search. Now he can't.
You've ruined it.
In there. I know. I'm going to say, well, I already called this one, but yeah.
Has he used this in the past? This sounds familiar.
I mean, we've talked about this.
No, I mean, did Chris Kapp use this as a...
I don't think he did.
Year-end talking point.
I don't think he has. Because, you know, Microsoft introduced this concept back in 2017, 2018. But it's only now that they're filling out all the missing pieces that are actually going to make it truly useful.
Right.
Yeah. It's a big deal, guys. Guys and gals listening to the show. You should start playing around with this to see how this is going to impact your work accounts and your work orgs.
If I even knew how to, I might, but I have no idea how I would start using it.
Just go to office.com.
Yeah.
He needs a commercial account.
Oh, I don't have a commercial account. We have a Twitter account. I don't ever use it.
Yeah, you do. You guys do, right?
We do. Yeah. Okay. So I have to log into the business account.
Yeah, log into the business account. Go to office.com. That's one really easy way to do it.
Okay.
Or go to bing.com and see what shows up.
Bing it up, baby.
Bing it up, baby.
It's not going to bing itself.
Right. This thing's not going to bing itself. And that's all I'm going to tell you.
I use the Bing wallpaper app. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Oh, come on.
I shall bing it up just for you. I'm going to bing it up.
Right.
Now, I remember when... it wasn't even that long ago when I first heard about Project Reunion. It was Satya Nadella talking about it. And I kind of, my eyes went, what? What is Project Reunion?
It's still so confusing. Yeah, it's an attempt by Microsoft to combine its legacy and more modern application development models. So I'll just split it into Win32 and UWP just to make it super simple. And God, there's so much that goes into this, but one of the big deals is that, sorry, for some reason, I get choked up when I talk about UWP. one of the many problems with UWP is that it's versioned to Windows 10. So every version of Windows 10 will come up with new capabilities. You need to have that version of Windows 10 to use those UWP features. And so what they decided to do was, and I'm super simplifying this because this isn't the only reason they're doing this, but they're basically separating Windows application development into three layers. So there's UI, API, and then app model. And they're decoupling all of this from specific Windows 10 versions. So WinUI 3 is the umbrella term for the coming new version of the UI layer of this, right? So this has been like a one-year journey. 1 year ago this month, they were saying they would complete this work by November 2020. Now they're saying sometime in 2021. But the third and I assume final preview of WinUI 3.0 is available today. From a new features perspective, the big thing is ARM64 support, which is cool, and then some other stuff. But it's interesting, like how much more is coming. So by the time of the final release of WinUI 3.0. It will support such things as using .NET 5.0. Remember, that was released last week in UWP apps, XAML Island support, which is sort of, no, it isn't. I was going to say it's the predecessor to MAUI, but that's not really true. Forget that. Windows 10X compatibility, the ability to customize UWP app title bars, which is actually really cool because I've tried to do that and there are ways to do it. It's horrific. So that's nice. And then support for fluent UIs like Reveal, Highlight, and Acrylic. So there's still a lot to go, and they're going to keep working on it past 3.0, of course. But this is a key component of the Project Reunion stuff. And I guess the way you could think of it is it's like the next-gen version of the UI technology that was once coupled to UWP but is now available or will soon be available to to all developers if you're using Win32, Windows Forms, Windows Presentation Foundation, whatever, separate from the OS and separate from UWP. I feel like I don't explain things well anymore. Have I gone off a cliff?
I feel like things like Microsoft Search and Project Reunion, you either have to oversimplify them to make them understandable, or you have to get really in the weeds if you want to do it justice. Yeah. Like there's no middle ground on some of these.
I kind of hope that they finish this in time for build. That would be kind of an ideal time frame.
I bet they will. They said 2021. Right?
But there's so much more coming, right? So, you know, .NET 5, which was released this month, was also originally supposed to be the be-all, end-all for this, combined platform. It's not, you know, so .NET 6 will come out next year. So next year, I think the big things we can look forward to are this, WinUI 3. Maui hopefully happens next year. But by the way, that could be pushed back. The next version of Xamarin, which will also support desktop apps. And I want to say web apps, but maybe I'm confusing that with Flutter.
Didn't they say Maui is .NET 6, which would be November 2021, right? Yeah.
So. At the earliest, ship .NET 6, then you ship Maui. So Maui might actually be in early 22, but I don't want to get to that. But we'll see what happens there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's a lot of developer stuff happening over the next year in the Microsoft space.
Did somebody say Maui next year? No, not that kind of Maui. We'll all be in Maui in 2022.
Yeah, that would be pretty good.
Wowie. I thought this was really a cool story because I'm a fan of Python.
Mm-hmm.
And Guido von Rossum, who is the benevolent dictator for life, but retired, I think, pretty much. Except he's not retired anymore.
I think he retired for 6 months, and he was like, screw this.
Retirement is not all it's cracked up to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, he announced he's joining Microsoft as a distinguished engineer.
Awesome.
I know. And, you know, so many people are like, wait, Microsoft? But you know what? Microsoft does a lot with Python. And they have done a lot with Python for a while.
Speaking of AI, actually.
Yep, they do a lot around AI with Python. But as far back as 2010, they had Python tools for Visual Studio. And then I remember writing about this Iron Python. Remember that? Iron Python on .NET. They've done a lot with Python, Azure Notebooks, Visual Studio Code, all these things, a lot of them in the name of AI, but not exclusively. So he says he's going to join the developer division and work on Python.
Yeah, data scientists love Python.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. All right, Paul.
Yep.
The moment you've long awaited. First of all, are you still in love with... How is Call of Duty Cold War?
It's mixed.
I've seen some negatives about it.
I'm not loving it.
Yeah.
I'm actually running into the same problem with this game as I ran into with its predecessor, which is a weird problem for me to have because I'm actually really good at Call of Duty. But it's the type of thing where, like, this is what discourages people from playing. You run into a room and you're dead. And you don't even know. You didn't see the person that got you. You didn't even have a chance to raise. You didn't even know they were there. You're just dead. You're like, okay, well, whatever. You get these lag deaths sometimes. And then dead. And it's like, am I new? Did I just start playing video games? What's going on here?
What is going on?
So I'm trying to work through it, but I'm not having a very positive experience. It's very strange.
I've seen complaints about the maps,
the maps, most of them are too small. Actually, so they're either way too small or way too big. It's kind of weird. The maps are not very good for the most part. There are a couple of good ones, but there's not many, you know, there's six or eight of them. I play multiplayer specifically. I don't know. I'm going to keep trying, but it's weird. I go back to the game I have been playing, which is like Black Ops, and I can rattle off at like an 18 kill streak and with no problem at all. Like I dominate most matches. Like it's great. You know, I'm like, okay, well, I can still play Call of Duty good. And then I go back in the other game. I'm like dead. You know, it's really strange.
You think that's lag that's causing that, or
My theory on Modern Warfare was that it was lag related, something to do with the Call of Duty's, all shooters probably have this problem. Imagine there are two people on a map and you both know you're there and you can see each other and he's shooting you and you're shooting him and you're missing each other. But you go around the corner of something that would protect you from getting shot and you make it and then you die.
Wow.
And from his perspective, he shot you before you went behind the thing.
Right.
But from your perspective,
know about it,
you made it
then.
And then you died.
Yeah.
So that's a lag latency problem. I don't know what to call it, but.
So these could all these could be fixed. The lack of good maps is annoying.
Yeah.
Like, you know, guys, you had a whole year to work on this.
But maybe I literally played an older Call of Duty game all of last year because I didn't like the new game. Right. And now this new one comes out and it's exactly the same problem.
It's too bad. I had high hopes. I really like the premise of it. But
yeah.
Oh, well.
Maybe I'll play the single player for a little while and.
So this is, according to Microsoft, the biggest launch yet of an Xbox platform.
And what's the metric they provided to prove that that was true? I don't know. They didn't, nothing. There's no hard data disclosed at all.
It's the biggest ever.
So what Brad has said is, Brad wrote that when the Xbox One launched, they actually provided sales numbers right at the front of it and then stopped doing it because it got bad. So in 2013, I think it was, they said that they sold 1 million Xbox One consoles in the first 24 hours. And Microsoft has said that this has sold better than that. So
more than a million.
They sold more than a million. I think the way to look at this is they sold every one that they made.
Yeah.
For sure.
They could have sold more, I'm sure.
Could have sold more.
Because they couldn't. They just ran out.
I think the big news here, though, is the attach rate with Xbox Game Pass, which is kind of interesting. So according to I guess this is sort of hard data, and although we don't know the number of new consoles, but 70% of those 1 million plus are attached to new and existing Xbox Game Pass members. So
that doesn't say they all took the $35 deal, but
it doesn't say that, but yeah.
Still 70%. I mean, I'm sure Microsoft considers Game Pass its cash cow for this.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how they're going to make money on this generation.
So
for
that's
sure.
Really good news.
Yep.
That's
yep.
Amazing. So that's, 70%.
Yeah, that's neat.
You know what I want to know, though? Another question for Chris Cap later. How did they so misestimate the supply for these consoles?
Well, Sony did it too.
Right. There's a bunch of theories here. You know, we talked a lot about Apple earlier, but, you know, to bring Apple into the story again, Apple does a really good job with this kind of thing. If you go to apple.com, you're like, I want to buy an iPhone, and go through the process, and they will say, you will get this iPhone on December 12th, and you will get this iPhone on December 12th. They know exactly when it's coming. They're really good at that. If you go to xbox.com and you say you want to buy an Xbox, they say, nope. That's the end of this. That's it. You can't get it in a queue. You can't.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way to
know. I'm curious why.
I think it
is. They're pretty good at forecasting.
What's that?
They're pretty good at Microsoft at forecasting. And when they have a supply chain issue, they usually announce it in their earnings. And I didn't hear them say that on their latest earnings.
Right. So, no, they didn't. They did come out. I think it was like the day after, a couple of days after they had this biggest launch ever where I think the CFO Xbox said that anyone hoping to get one of these things during the next couple of months and into 2021 is probably going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
And so the question there is, okay, well, why, right, was what you're asking. So I think component shortage is a problem, and that's something they would have known about ahead of time, so that's slightly dishonest. 2020 is obviously a challenging year. Okay.
Yeah.
Demand is tough. I don't remember where I read this. Digital Foundry or one of the game sites was basically saying, look, you know, Sony and Microsoft are both selling these consoles at a loss this first year. And when you're selling something at a loss that you're selling millions of units of, you know, you get into kind of a weird situation where you're trying to balance the, you know, component costs are coming down. It would be better if we sold these consoles next year when these things were cheaper to us, you know, to Microsoft. But we also don't want to disappoint customers and create a weird situation where now everyone just gives up on us and walk away. So I don't know where the truth is exactly. But yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that if Microsoft could sell these same consoles 6 months from now, 12 months from now, it would be better for the company because they stand a chance of either losing less money or actually making money. Whereas if they sell them today, you know, they're just losing money.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. I bet, like Leo mentioned, the Xbox All Access. I think, I don't know that that makes money for them exactly, but if you think about pushing this purchase out over 2 years and you get 2 years of Game Pass, I bet that's at least a break even for them right now, especially on the S, you know. That's probably better for them. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just find it confusing. I can't just get in the queue.
I know. Right. I should say that. Just like get some word from them like, hey, we know you're trying to buy an Xbox. Would you like help with that from Clippy?
I mean,
something.
Apple did have this problem in the early days of iPhone.
Yeah. Oh, no, but this is something they've mastered.
They have mastered it now. Yeah.
My God, it's amazing. Yeah. I their site is incredible like that. Even this Pixel thing I ordered, you know, I checked on it the other day and it said it's going to arrive November 18 to 21 or whatever. I'm like, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of days went by and I was like, I wonder what's going on with this thing. And I looked at it and said, it's going to arrive November 24th to 28th. And I'm like, wait, what did it say? An earlier date? And then, I don't know, yesterday, I think I woke up, there was an email, hey, it's coming tomorrow. Like, okay. Like, I mean, that's fine. Like, it's not coming in December, but it's like, they're also a little like, ugh, like they don't really know what's going on either. Apple to me is like the one, well, and Amazon, obviously, the logistics there are amazing, but
yeah,
you can just order, you can go, Apple, you could get this thing that's not, you're not going to get it for a month and they'll still nail the day, you know? They have such a command of their entire supply chain.
Yeah, I'm sure they sell many more iPhones on day one than 1 million. So,
yes. But, yeah. Well, by the way, that might contribute to the why they have such a command of it, right?
Right.
You know, a million sounds like a lot, but you got to remember, like in a console generation where Microsoft sells, you know, 80 or 90 million consoles, or Sony does, 100 million consoles, Apple sells that many iPhones in like in 5 weeks. Right. Like, I mean, I'm talking about a product that was on sale for like 7 years, right. You know?
Yeah.
Sell 100 million. 100 million sounds like a lot. But Apple sells, I mean, many times that every year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What's this about commercial cloud that was appended?
Oh, because we always joke every time Microsoft has a quarterly earnings report, they talk about commercial cloud. It's nonsense. And their Xbox announcement was nonsense on the same level. It's like, it's X percent better than something else that we never told you the number of. It's, you know.
Yeah.
It's just
it's growing at 15% of some number we will never tell you.
So maybe the Xbox will be part of the commercial cloud number next quarter.
Man.
So Halo 4 for the PC. What's that all about?
Yeah, so this is kind of a big week for Halo. So yesterday, I guess it was yesterday, Microsoft released Halo 4 remastered for the PC, the first time it's ever been on the PC. So they have now completed the port of Halo the Master Chief Collection to the PC. They released the first game, and they're doing it chronologically within the game chronology. So Halo Reach came out last December, and then over the course of 2020, they released, you know, the first Halo, Halo Combat Evolved, Halo 2, Halo 3, Halo ODST, which is a new notebook from a couple of weeks ago. And then Halo 4 now. And the Halo 4 is it. So they promised they were going to do this by the end of 2020. And this is the only thing that has gone right this entire year. So it is available for $9.99 if you want to just buy the one game. Or you can buy the Master Chief Collection on the Microsoft Store for the PC, Steam. Or you can get this via Xbox Game Pass Ultimate or PC. And the Master Chief Collection is $39.99 if you want to buy it that way.
I have the old one.
Also, in even bigger news,
yes,
Halo Master Chief Collection has also been optimized for the Xbox Series X and S.
Oh.
So if you have that or if you have Game Pass, whatever, download this to the new console. You're going to get 120 frames per second.
Ooh.
It will be in 4K on the Series X and 1080p on the Series S and some other things. There's some other PC-like features, you know, that you can improve like your field of view, which is kind of an unusual thing on a console. But they've been graphically updated. The new consoles.
Is the frame rate higher on the 1080p? No, it's still 120.
It's 120, but it's 120 on either console, at different resolutions.
Because you could, theoretically, if you have a lower resolution, have a higher frame rate. But I guess that's the whole point of the Series S, is it's lower power. Do you, I mean, notice, I should, I, You have both, right? Do you notice a difference when you play the S versus the X?
I never played a game where I noticed a big difference. So there are games like Assassin's Creed Valhalla and Dirt 5 or 4, whatever the number is, the new one, where, yeah, you can actually tell a graphical quality difference in between the two consoles. But like Call of Duty, including the new one, I switch between the consoles regularly. I have never noticed a difference. And my set is, it's 4K, 60 frames. But
so that's important. I was suspected that was the case. That's why I brought it up. That's kind of important. People are going to say, oh, I have to have 4K. It's going to look so much better.
Well, so here's the thing, though. So I should qualify what I just said. I play multiplayer. So because of the nature of multiplayer, those games are going to be kind of tuned down graphically because mm-hmm. much unpredictable stuff going on and so many people running around in the game.
There's a lot of rendering going on.
Yeah, and you can't assume any of it, right? Because it's a live situation. So it's possible the new Call of Duty in the single player campaign would look better and have higher frame rates on the X. I've only played like 5 minutes of it. And it starts, the first scene is like one of those stupid chase scenes that I hate so much. I'm like, yep, just go back to multiplayer. I can't see. I'm not going to chase a guy across the rooftops. I'm just not in the mood. I'm getting too old for this.
You know, you don't physically chase them over the rooftops.
It's still laborious. Okay.
It's mentally taxing.
Yes. A lot of like driving sequences in Call of Duty games are just tedious.
Pretty soon, you'll just have a car with a knob on the wheel and you'll just shoot out the window.
Yeah,
and you just...
exactly. I'll be playing Call of Duty with my other hand and eating a chocolate sundae.
All right, I'm going to take a little break. We're going to go to the back of the book in just a second. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. It's Windows Weekly, brought to you this week by ExpressVPN. I know you probably understand the reason why one wants a VPN. And there are a lot of choices out there. You're inundated with ads for VPNs all the time. But I also know that it's a little, you know, it's like, well, okay, but which one's the best? Which one's not going to spy on me? I'm just going to cut to the chase here. ExpressVPN. Just get ExpressVPN. It's the one I use. CNET says it's the best. Wired says it's the best. It's the number one VPN in the world for good reason. It is what you want with a VPN. So there's three reasons people use a virtual private network. Of course, security is number one, but not so much in the coffee shop these days or the hotel or the cruise ship. But if you ever are on an unsecured Wi-Fi access point, or does it actually even be secure? You could have a password, but there's other people using it you don't know. That's by definition insecure. You'll want a VPN to keep them from snooping on what you're doing. Okay, good reason. The other reason is privacy. Everybody, your ISP, your mobile carrier, that access point you're on, they can see what you're doing and often log it and sell it to marketers. They know where you're going on the web. They see your searches. That's not probably what you want. They do see your searches because if you just look at the URL for Google search, you'll see the search terms are in the URL. They see that. The third reason you might want a VPN like ExpressVPN is perhaps so that you could eliminate geographic restrictions and start watching TV in the UK or Japan or whatever. Now, let me tell you why ExpressVPN is the best for all three. Anytime you're using a VPN for security and privacy, you're just kicking the can down the road. You're saying, I don't trust these people around me. I trust the VPN provider. Well, do you? Do you? You got to, right? They may even be worse than your ISP. In many cases, they are. If you're on a free or cheap VPN, they probably are. They may be injecting ads. They're certainly logging what you're doing. You want a VPN, a virtual private network provider that does not log. ExpressVPN not only doesn't log, they go the extra mile to prevent logging. They couldn't log even if they wanted to. A rogue employee couldn't log. And this is because they use Trusted Server. Trusted Server, when you log into ExpressVPN server, it spins up a copy. This is the Trusted Server, a copy in RAM only. and it is sandboxed, so it can't write to the hard drive, so it could not log what you were doing at all. And when you exit, it's gone. It's out of RAM. It's only in RAM. It's not on the drive. So it's gone, and there's no trace of your visit at all left behind. And you don't have to take my word for it. ExpressVPN is regularly audited by PricewaterhouseCoopers, one of the biggest assurance firms in the world, PwC. And PwC says, yep, their privacy policy, spot on. They do exactly that. Yep, trusted server works exactly as I just described it. There is no logging going on. We know it. That's the reason I use ExpressVPN. I also think it's really good for that third use, that watching Netflix in the UK or in Japan, because they invest so much in their infrastructure. They have huge speed benefit. You can watch HD video no problem on a VPN. In fact, you could put it on your router and leave it on all the time, protect your whole family, your whole household, and never even know it's there. They're that fast. And that really comes from an investment in infrastructure. And that's why a free VPN is just not going to make it. Look, trust ExpressVPN. None of the problems the other VPNs have. Trust me. And I keep an eye on it. I'm watching constantly. That's why we do their ads. When you use our offer, which is you subscribe for a year, that's going to give you the best monthly price. And when you do it using the URL expressvpn.com/windows, expressvpn.com/windows, we'll give you an extra 3 months. So that's 15 months for the price of 12, gets it down to below $7 a month. That, in my opinion, any less than that, you're running a big risk. You want to pay them enough money so that they invest in the infrastructure, so they are not incented to spy on you. I think that's a really good price for the best VPN in the world. ExpressVPN.com/windows. It's a no-brainer. That's the one. You don't have to worry about it. Trust it. Stop letting people keep logs of what you do online. ExpressVPN.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Now, Paul Thurrott takes us on a little trip back in time. I am shocked, sir, by your pick of the week this week.
Well, so Google Photos was in the news this week for all the wrong reasons. Google announced that they would no longer offer free unlimited storage of photos.
Shocking.
Shock. Yeah. And, yeah, you know, how I don't know if you've noticed this, but people and tech enthusiasts tend to react to this kind of thing in overly negative ways.
Oh, yeah,
and
I'm leaving. That's it. It's fine. I'm done.
Yep.
I got calls all weekend on the radio show. Where can I go?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's kind of a side tip. I'll just say that if you're an Amazon Prime member, you can store unlimited photos there.
Original quality, even, which is
original quality. Mm, yeah. And if you, you have Microsoft 365, any kind, you have a terabyte of storage, you could use that too. Yep. And by the way, you should back up to multiple storage services.
I
anyway.
Use all three.
However,
exactly. Yep.
You know what? Google's Photos is the best of these services.
It's still the best.
By far.
Yeah.
It's not even close.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, what did they really do, and like, how much does it really cost? You know what? And by the way, is it reasonable to expect unlimited photo storage for the rest of your life? I mean, really? I know it's a little bit of a rug pulling out from under your feet moment, or a bait and switch kind of a thing. But
if you already have stuff on there, that's going to stay free, right?
That's what's amazing. So here's the advice on that. First of all, you should keep using Google Photos. If you're not using it, you should use it right now.
I agree.
Upload every single photo you have to the service.
Yep.
It'll be free. It'll be there forever for free. Just do it.
Do it now before June.
Yep, June 2021.
Yep.
But here's the thing. So I literally, I back up all my photos from all my phones to this service. I have scanned in every single photo I've ever taken in my life and backed them all up to the service. I am using 120 gigabytes of storage. And by the way, a lot of it is nonsense because I take pictures of products for the website and all that stuff. So it's stupid. I could probably trim that down in half, but whatever.
That's the story of my photo album too. A lot of it is nonsense.
Yeah. Kid, dog, computer, phone, kid. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Google's storage service is called Google One. It's $1.99 per month for 100 gigs of storage, or $2.99 per month for 200 gigs of storage. So for the amount of money, for the amount of storage I'm using, which is a lot, it would cost me $36 a year.
It's worth it.
Yeah. Just do it.
Yeah.
I don't even understand this complaint. I was. Oh, by the way, I should say I'm already paying for it.
I pay for Google One. I pay for 2 terabytes.
The reason I pay is because I have opted to always upload in original quality. Right.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, you could have made the argument. I don't remember. I might have changed this, but the way Google Photos uploading works is you can upload in what they call high quality, which, if I'm not mistaken, certainly was and probably still is 16 megapixels or lower, or in original quality, which is what the whatever the quality of your phone is. This is a big deal for video because I think video high quality is probably 1080p or something. So if you do a lot of video, you know, okay, maybe you want to do original, but most people could probably get away with original or high
JPEGs
quality for everything.
They're fine.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't. I, the way people react to things is always entertaining and depressing at the same time, you know. Yeah.
It's the principle, Paul. Right. It's the principle.
It is.
It's the principle. They were getting,
it was free. Look, and so why isn't
my
always
kids
free?
Get a free iPhone because they're my kids until they leave.
Yeah.
And then it's up to them. It's not a bait and switch. You know, at some point, you just graduate.
Have you pulled the plug, by the way, yet on your son?
So we did.
Wow.
We told him we did. But actually, this Christmas, we're going to.
I am still paying for my 28-year-old daughter, my 26-year-old son's cell phone.
Yeah, so he's 20.
I'm still paying for my ex-wife's cell phone. I can't. It's just, I can't. It's like, it's fine.
Look,
I pay for.
Both college students right now.
I pay for Lisa's father's smartphone. Yeah, I pay for my mother's smartphone. I apparently am the cell phone Santa.
Yes, you are.
Cell phones, yeah.
Want to pay for ours?
Well, I'll send my son's bill to you, Leo. You probably wouldn't even notice.
I can't. I don't know how I'm going to cut my kids off. I just don't know. I can't. Yeah. It's expensive. They're used to basically $100 a month service. They can't afford that.
You know what the big one is like the entertainment services. Like my wife and I would cut back on that stuff a lot. Like, you know, they all watch like Hulu and Netflix and Apple TV and they get Spotify and they, you know, and it's like, guys, you're costing me like $150 a month just in entertainment.
I know.
You tell me a story. In a way, you watched.
My story is the story of Google in reverse. Google gave it away and now they want to charge. I'm never going to stop charging. It's not, I can't, it's,
that's funny.
Yeah.
I hope to make the break. That's all.
Good luck to you, Paul.
We thought we did.
Yeah.
But we,
anyway. Merry Christmas, kids.
Yeah.
You know, that thing I used to give you, I'm going to still give you. That's your Christmas present.
Exactly.
That'd be a nice gift. That'd be a very nice gift.
Well, you know, it's like the new Macs. Everything just works. It's the same as it always was. That's the win. Yep. You know?
I even, when Abby says, calls up as she does probably every 6 months, I broke my phone. I say, all right, I got one for you.
Wow.
Well, she gets the hand-me-downs, so it's not like I'm buying a phone for her, but.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Still.
It's expensive. Yeah.
Still, it's pretty funny, actually. It's a funny world.
Plus, my kids use iPhones, right? So they're like, oh, can we FaceTime or whatever? It's like, no, we can't FaceTime. The normal people in this house use Android phones, so we're going to have to figure out something.
Of Windows Weekly. Yeah, my daughter is weird. My daughter uses Android. Everybody else in the family is iPhone. But okay. So I have to duo her.
Yes. Yeah, we've done Facebook Messenger, I think is the most common one.
Yeah.
A little slice of my soul goes away every time that little app boots up. Anyway.
All right. You could Skype.
No.
See, there's always something worse.
I've
guys.
Tried to Skype family and friends. Mm-mm.
Nope, I know. My family won't either. We have to Zoom.
It never occurred to me to ask for Skype. I guess that never came up.
Mm. What about Zoom? You could Zoom them.
Zoom. They all understand Zoom.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that Zoom's not going on my phone, so.
I wish Zoom were not on any of my. You know,
Facebook Messenger has those little. You can do like backgrounds, and you can have like little animal hats and stuff. So when I get bored with the conversation, I just turn into a panda.
You gotta give us a picture of you with an animal hat. I want to see this.
It's on Facebook. There's a picture.
All right.
Oh, I might have to join Facebook just to see that.
Yeah.
App pick of the week, number two.
Yeah, number two. So I mentioned Halo. I've kind of made this observation or advice before, but if you have not played these games or have not played them recently, seriously, if you have one of the modern consoles, actually even an Xbox One, doesn't matter, or a PC, a gaming PC, the way that they've done these games, they've remastered, these things are like high frame rate, 4K grab, whatever your thing can do, it can do. If you played like Halo 3 ODST back in the day on the Xbox, you booted it in, you played it, it was whatever stupid, it was some terrible resolution. I remember 700p or some stupid thing. It looked however it looked, and that was it. If you go into the PC version of that app today, it looks like a modern PC game. It's got a million, all the textures and lighting effects, and it's unbelievable. These games look great. So, and they're cheap. You know, you can buy the whole thing for $40. You can buy an individual game for $9. We all have a lot of extra time, sadly.
Yes.
A lot of the new games, as I'm observing with the new Call of Duty, are not necessarily that compelling. These are great games, all of them. You know, I'd give them a shot if you haven't or if you haven't done so in a long time. They're really, really good.
Mary Jo Foley, it's time for an Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Yes, so this week we learned the new branding name for what used to be called the Common Data Service, which was kind of like a data platform within Dynamics 365. Microsoft, over the summer, rebranded this to DataFlex without checking the trademark.
Hey, anybody have the name DataFlex?
Yep.
DataFlex.
I got a GoDaddy email here. I have an answer.
DataFlex.
Yeah. Yep. As soon as they did that, they got sued by the company that owned the term DataFlex. Then they had to go back to their code name, which was Project Oakdale. And so for several months, we were calling this Project Oakdale. And as of this week, we now are calling it Dataverse. By the way, there are people who own Dataverse, like there's Dataverse.org. Hopefully Microsoft checked this out before they did this.
We're going to call it iPhone. Is that anybody have iPhone? Oh,
but anyway, aside from the name, what this is pretty cool. Inside of Teams, now you can use this data platform called Dataverse. You can use it in conjunction with the Power Platform low-code, no-code tools right inside of Teams, which is very cool. What this means in the big picture is, you know, when Microsoft first announced Teams, it was like a group collaboration platform. And this is just more evidence of Teams becoming the everything platform. Like now it's where you can do development if you want, using developer tools like Power Platform tools. You can put third-party applications inside of your meetings and your meeting invites right inside of Teams. So Teams is becoming like the everything hub, just kind of like the everything store. You know, it's everything. You can just stay in Teams all day and do all your tasks, stay right in your flow. Here we go again.
Okay.
Yeah, I did go there. Anyway, if you hear Dataverse, what it is the Common Data Service, a.k.a. DataFlex, a.k.a. Project Oakdale. And if you know what CDS is and you use CDS, there's two versions. There's one for using CDS/Dataverse right inside of Teams. And then the thing that used to be called the Common Data Service inside of Power Platform and inside of Dynamics 365, that's also been permanently rebranded Dataverse. So there's no more CDS. How confusing was that? Super confusing. Aren't you glad I'm here to help? Or help confuse?
I have no.
What's Dataverse again?
Yeah, no words.
So Dataverse is like a database.
Oh, no.
You started her up again, Paul. You started her up.
I know.
Code name pick of the week.
Okay, the walking cat threw down the gauntlet to me and said, Mary Jo, is Pluton's codename Saber? And I said, why do you think that? And he showed a slide. I don't know where the slide came from on his Twitter account. And it's about Windows 10 Pro. And it says, now more than ever, Windows 10 Pro has the best product roadmap. And it shows you all these things you get when you use Windows 10 Pro. And one of them says the Saber security processor.
Mm.
I'm like, that's got to be Pluton, right? Because you see secured core PC. You see autopilot improvements, the next version of Edge, which was codenamed Anaheim. You see all these things, and I'm like, that's got to be Pluton right there, right? The thing that says Saber security processor. I don't know. I don't even know where this slide came from. I don't know.
Next version of Edge. So Anaheim was Krege's code name.
Yes, it was. Yep.
So this would obviously have to predate that. So it's pretty old. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like there's some security processor that we know about from the past year.
Must be Pluton.
It's got to be Pluton, right?
It's got to be Pluton.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting, if that's what it is.
It had to be Pluton.
Why did it have to be Pluton?
Oh, and from last week, remember we were all debating what is CBL Mariner Linux Microsoft?
Yeah.
Okay, found out what CBL is.
What?
Common Base Linux is the CBL.
Common Base Linux, not Canadian Bacon Linux?
No, not Canadian Bacon Linux, sadly.
Disappointed.
Me too.
Was it close?
Not even close. But we do also know, based on this name, that CBL Mariner Linux is the Linux that's inside of Azure Stack HCI containers. So Microsoft is using this already and has built it into some of its products.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, because there's a default Linux for a lot of Docker containers is Alpine Linux. So this is probably like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because we were thinking C might be container because we knew it was a container optimized Linux.
Based Linux or something like that.
Yeah.
So what is it again?
But now we know. Common base
common
Linux.
Common base Linux. Okay.
Yep.
Interesting. So it's the common base for your Linux based container.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Good you put a link in because I wanted to see this beer pick of the week.
So my beer pick this week is from Manhattan's only brewery called Torch and Crown. Torch and Crown just opened. Like, it's open for business. They have a heated tent outside, and they're seating people 25% capacity in their brewery that's brand new and beautiful. And they've got a barley wine in a can, which is kind of unusual to put barley wine in cans, called King Elizabeth. And King Elizabeth is the name of the brewery cat for their production facility in the Bronx. And you can see him. He looks a little beat up, looks a little tough. they said King Elizabeth
is he a Windsor
is the emperor.
Or a Tudor?
Exactly. He's the emperor of our production facility in the Bronx. So, you know, a brewery cat in the Bronx, you got to be tough.
That is a great label. I would drink this. Now, barley wine
this
is going to
be really high in alcohol,
yeah,
right?
Oh, 11.4.
It is. 11.4, yeah. Which is actually sort of on the lower end of barley wines.
Barley wine beers can be tough.
Yeah.
It is. And so barley wines usually taste like dried fruits and toffee, all these delicious dark fruit things like, that are typically great, very, very sweet.
So you're very happy before you pass out.
Yes, you are.
Yes.
Drink this one sitting down.
Exactly. They say it's not quite an English style barley wine and not quite an American style. It's got American hops kind of made into an English style. I have not yet tried this, but the cans are very short. They're not like 16-ounce cans, but I would love to try this one.
I want it.
Yeah, me too.
King Elizabeth from the Torch and Crown Brewing Company. And they're in Brooklyn. So if you're if you're in Brooklyn.
No, they're in Manhattan.
They're in Manhattan. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they're down kind of towards the financial district on the west side. If you click on the Torch and Crown main site, you can see a picture of their brewery. It's really beautiful.
That's cool.
Brand new.
Oh, it's it says Manhattan's Brewery.
Yeah. It's the only brewery right now.
Well,
you know what? I did a tour of it before it was open, before COVID happened. And it's bigger than it looks because the whole downstairs is where they do the brewing.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know what that looks
pretty
like,
cool.
Mary Jo, is that place in Framingham.
Jack's Abbey. It does look a little like Jack's Abbey.
Right? Yeah. These hops growing on the wall are pictures of hops.
I know. It looks like it. It might be hops.
That's pretty cool.
I know. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So if you do ever get to come back to Manhattan one day, you'll have to stop by Torch and Crown and go to the brewery.
Somebody said King Elizabeth is Walking Cat's cousin, Drunken Cat.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Drunken Cat. Yeah, there's always one in the royal family that kind of black sheep in the corner.
Yeah.
You don't want to get in the paper for the wrong reasons.
I can't have that right now.
I know, right?
Well, as always, when we get to a great beer, it means we have come to the end of a great episode of Windows Weekly. I am so glad you guys are here. We do the show every Wednesday, about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. If you want to come by and watch, there's a live stream of audio or video at twit.tv/live. People watching live should join the chat room because that's where they're chatting live at the same time, irc.twit.tv. On-demand versions of the show, audio and video available at our website, twit.tv/ww. There's a Windows Weekly YouTube channel. If you watch after the fact, you still can comment and participate in the community at our forums, which are at www.twit.community. The Twit community is a nice place to hang out. Paul Thurrott hangs out at Thurrott.com, T-H-U-R-R-O-T-T.com. His books, The Field Guide to Windows 10, chiefly available at leanpub.com. And that's automatically updated, so it keeps up with the latest versions. You'll have 20H2 and everything after if you buy it now. Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's her ZDNet blog. But we know where they are of a Wednesday afternoon, right here on Windows Weekly. And no traveling in the future, I'm guessing. No plans to leave town or no.
No.
Nope. Just going to stay home.
It's pretty much like a 5-mile circle from the house. It's
Yeah.
Well, I know the trapdoor must be nearby because you frequently.
The trapdoor is very close.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you walk there?
No, it's not that close, but
it'd be kind of cool.
It's a straight shot, as we say. A
straight shot. See, Mary Jo can walk everywhere, including Manhattan's brewery. So that's cool.
Yeah, one day.
I'll get back to Manhattan someday soon, I hope.
Someday. Yeah. I do. I hope so, too. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.
Want more Twit? Check out Tech News Weekly, twit.tv/TNW. Tech News Weekly is a show where Jason Howell and I bring the latest and greatest interviews to you from the people making and breaking the tech news. twit.tv/TNW.